Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, may it please the Court. My name is Michael Lieberman with Federal Defender Services of Wisconsin, and I represent David Kirby before the Court today. Your Honors, it's our position, really, that the starting point for the analysis in this appeal should be this Court's order in Hopkins, which is discussed in both briefs. That was a case that involved the same district judge and essentially the same statements that are at issue in this appeal. The argument here is that prior to sentencing, Mr. Kirby, through counsel, submitted a sentencing memo in which he laid out some very traumatic experiences in his childhood, mental health issues. We had him evaluated by a psychologist. We submitted a report to the doctor, district court, excuse me.
Why is that mitigating? I don't understand that.
Which part of that?
I don't understand why the psychiatric is manic depressive. I don't see how that is a mitigating factor. It make him less likely to engage in the drug business.
On this record, in this case, the argument was throughout his life he had received numerous opportunities at drug treatment. Our argument was the underlying problem was a non-drug-related mental health issue that had never been addressed, and that had that been addressed, then he could have adequately addressed his drug addiction, which would have kept him out of the drug business. That was our argument.
What's the evidence for that?
It's
obviously insane, right?
Well, he's got some.
His statement at the hearing. I mean, that's typical, manic depressive insanity.
Correct, and that's never been addressed.
What does addressed mean?
He's never had that sort of treatment. He's never been given the opportunity for that sort of treatment.
The problem is the treatment for manic depressive is drugs. And the problem is they don't take their drugs because they like the manic phase, right?
That's true with some manic depressive. It's not true with others.
Well,
there are certainly some who successfully medicate.
What's the indication that it's true with him?
There's no indication one way or the other. He's never been given the opportunity.
Why would the judge want to give him a lighter sentence on the basis of some unsubstantiated suggestion that maybe he could get some psychiatric treatment that would as long as he's got these heavy addictions, he's going to be in the drug business, isn't he?
Well,
how's he going to pay for his addictions without the drug business?
And that very much goes to the heart of our argument, which is what the government argued, and we don't know what the judge found because he didn't make any findings on that issue. But our argument was, and what Dr. Moran, I believe, said in his report, is if you address don't just view him as a drug addict. That's only one of the symptoms. Look at the underlying problem, which is his mental health, his post-traumatic stress disorder, all of those things that come from the years of sexual abuse he endured as a child. If we could treat those, then he'll stop self-medicating with the drugs.
Don't become manic depressive because of sexual abuse. It's an imbalance in hormones.
I could debate with the court.
I'm learning something medically here today, too.
Excuse me?
I said I'm learning something medically here, too. So.
I may be all wet, but...
Your Honor, I think the point is that all of these discussions might go to whether the sentence is substantively reasonable. That's not the issue. The issue is whether the district court adequately considered the arguments that were being made and reached a procedurally reasonable sentence.
I listened to the arguments, and I think, and especially after the prosecutor summarized this extraordinary criminal history, the judge just felt, a person with this history, he just has to have a very long sentence.
That might be what the judge...
The idea of somehow a psychiatric cure and then he'd get rid of his addictions and become an honest person, it'd be implausible.
Well, Your Honor, the problem is that might be
what the judge have said. What would you like the judge to say? What could you say? It's all so nebulous.
Well, he could say, I don't accept this argument because of this reason. He could say the same things that Your Honor is saying now. He didn't. We don't know.
He did. The record does show he considered them.
But the record shows he heard them.
Well, he says he came. He says, I studied and considered.
Which is exactly what the same judge said in Hopkins, and what this court found to be a rote statement not adequate
and
to allow review.
He said the psychological evaluation defendant prepared by Dr. Moran, and he linked the defendant's Moran's report does not conclude, offers no opinion that the lesser sentence will be helpful in this case, as he did in the earlier case.
I agree that the court does say those things. It's our position, and obviously it's ultimately up to this court.
He didn't give it enough attention.
He didn't give it meaningful consideration, which is what this court requires.
That's an interesting thing.
Moving on to a related but slightly different point, at page 22 of the sentencing transcript, and one of our related issues is that the judge treated the guidelines as presumptively reasonable. And he says, starting at line 22 on page 22, I do find that the advisory guideline sentencing range is reasonable and appropriate here, and there's no reason to sentence this defendant outside the advisory guideline system. So it's our position, what that shows is that this is a judge who starts from the guidelines and is looking for a reason to go outside the guidelines, which is exactly what presuming them to be an appropriate sentence would be, and that's not allowed.
So where do you want him to start?
With 3553A. And all of the factors under 3553A, one factor of which is the guideline range, but my reading of Rita and those cases is that's not the starting point. That is a factor, a consideration. It's not up to the defendant to persuade the judge to depart from the guidelines. That's the old system. That's not the new system.
So you're in your rebuttal.
And I will reserve the rest of my time.
One question. Did you present the court with some kind of treatment program for him?
We did not.
Is the only thing in here your statement at the sentencing hearing?
It's the sentencing memo with Dr. Moran's report and then the statements made at sentencing. That's correct. We did not present any testimony.
What did the report say besides what you said in your statement?
Your Honor, admittedly, the report is relatively short and terse. It doesn't involve a lot of detail other than to say that Mr. Kirby has issues other than just his drug addiction, which need to be addressed.
Issues which need to be addressed. That's so nebulous.
That's the record the court has to review, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Lieberman. Ms. Rumbelow?
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel Rita Rumbelow for the United States. Judge Posner, I think that one important thing that Dr. Moran put in his report that Judge Moody repeatedly referred to at the sentencing hearing, on page 2 of Dr. Moran's report, he said, during the times that Kirby was out of prison, he never followed up on seeking any mental health or psychotropic medication on his own. And he did note that in 1993, defendant Kirby had been diagnosed as bipolar. Attorney Lieberman just told you the report is not very detailed. It's less than 2 pages long. But again, Judge Moody, during his findings, said, I studied the report. He considered it. At one point during the sentencing hearing, he said, I am considering the mitigating factors set forth in Dr. Moran's report. How much more is Judge Moody supposed to say about this very brief 2-page report? It wasn't detailed, and unlike the defendant in Hopkins, no expert testimony was presented at the sentencing hearing in this case. So here you had Judge Moody, again, a very experienced district court judge. At sentencing hearing, defense counsel said to Judge Moody, well, you know, I already submitted my 11-page sentencing memorandum. I'm just not going to stand up here and reiterate it. But Judge Moody offered her the chance. He says, no, go ahead. That's okay. You can embellish it or you can do whatever you want to do. Just do what you want to do. So defense counsel barely made any reference to Dr. Moran's report in her comments at sentencing. She just said, look at Dr. Moran's report. My client has some mental health issues.
Well, Judge Moody certainly recognized it on page 9. He said, I would respectfully submit, I think that's Judge Moody, respectfully submit that a sentence of 115 months, no, that's not Moody, is it?
No, on page 9, I think that's defense counsel.
Oh, never mind.
But Judge Moody, the record is clear. You have to take the record as a whole, like we do with every transcript of every sentencing hearing. He listened to the arguments of both counsel. Again, he indicated he read the sentencing memorandum. He read Dr. Moran's report. And then, before he even imposed sentence, he said to counsel, I'm going to give you the full opportunity to make whatever legal objections you think are appropriate before I finally impose sentence. Then again, he goes, he makes additional findings. The judge clearly considered the factors in 3553A, first one being history and characteristics. The judge was very troubled by this defendant's characteristics, as I think this court has already recognized today. And then again, before imposing sentence, Judge Moody once again turned to counsel and said, is there anything else before I impose this sentence? Counsel says no. It is the government's position today, Your Honors. At that point in time, if counsel thought that Judge Moody or any district court judge failed to mention with specificity their primary argument, the district court opens the door prior to imposing sentence. That is the time for counsel to say, you know what, Your Honor, I did raise this primary argument. Can you make a little bit better record? Maybe I missed it. Maybe I didn't hear the court's findings on this. But instead, counsel just sits there and says, no, everything's fine.
Well, and Judge, I misspoke because that was counsel arguing. But when he does impose a sentence, Judge Moody says, this is on page 16, the defendant will be approximately 51 years old before he becomes eligible for release. Hopefully, from what he's told me here today and in his allocution statement, he will take advantage of all the resources that are available to him in the United States Bureau of Prisons, including drug and alcohol abuse treatment, mental health treatment, and a 3-year term of supervised release.
Yes.
So he was, that was part of his rationale for imposing the sentence.
Absolutely. And again, this was a sentence that was at the low end of a correctly calculated, uncontested advisory guideline range. And even though the guidelines suggested to the court that the sentence should be ordered to run consecutively to the defendant's undischarged term of state imprisonment, Judge Moody gave him a concurrent sentence. So substantively, the sentence is very reasonable, and if the court doesn't have any further questions, I ask that you affirm the judgment and conviction.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Rumbelow. Mr. Lieberman, what time does he have? 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I really just have one point I want to make here, and that's to respond to the government's, although they didn't phrase it as a waiver argument, I think in their brief they do say that we waive this review because we didn't take Judge Moody up on his opportunity to point out all the things that we think he didn't do. If the court looks at the exact question that he asked, which is on page 23, he says, do either of you know of any reason other than what you've already argued why this sentence should not be imposed? So it's our view that that's not an opportunity and not an invitation for defense counsel to...
No, I realize now I misunderstood your argument and Verma's argument and Moran's, Dr. Moran. I thought what his lawyer and Moran were trying to say was that this person's criminal activity was exacerbated by his mental illness, and if he got treatment, he'd be less dangerous, and so we wouldn't have to keep him in so long. That's what I thought. That, I think, is a respectable argument. That's not the argument here. This is a simple mercy argument, Impaired responsibility is not as evil as he looks because he's got this mental illness, so he should be given a break. And that's a perfectly good argument, too. But there's nothing that the judge has to say about that. Right? All he has to say is, yeah, he's got a mental illness, but he's very dangerous. Look at this criminal record. So I'm just not going to give his mental illness the same weight.
And I think the argument we were making, with all respect, is actually the first argument, that had he gotten the treatment...
That is not in Moran's report. You show me where that's in Moran's report.
There's not much.
There's nothing.
I can see
there's nothing.
That was the argument in our sentencing memo, at least as we understood the argument that we were making. That was the argument we intended to make, and I see my time is up. So.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and we thank the defenders for their...